Low oil prices, and still, oil companies find a way to make a profit. From APM in Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill with the Marketplace Midday Update. We begin our show with a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts its trading day. With us now to help make sense of the day's business news is Julie Niemann. She's an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Adrienne.
So we've got earnings reports out today from oil companies BP and Total showing better than expected profits. How's that even possible considering our low oil prices?
Well, you have oil companies typically get very fat and happy when prices are really high. They don't bother with cost cutting, and that's the key thing now. Cost cutting, becoming more efficient, getting to be the right size, this is what they're finally doing. They're negotiating with their suppliers, getting significantly lower prices. And that's well reflected when you see all the supply. Schlumberger, they've laid off 20,000 people. Baker Hughes, 10,500. Halliburton, 9,000. You have lower prices coming in on the service side now, and that's definitely going to help the oil and gas companies.
Another thing investors are keeping their eye on this morning is the Federal Reserve. It's meeting today and tomorrow. What are you watching for?
Well, there's no excitement right now simply because they pretty well ruled out any increase in April. But it's all centering right now on wage growth, and wage growth is beginning to pick up, and the labor markets are getting a little bit tighter here. That means more money in the consumers' pockets. That's when we're going to see a real pickup in consumer spending again. So the Fed likes the direction of it. The question is, will the market start hyperventilating over that increase in interest rates?
Julie Niemann is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thanks.
You bet.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is visiting the U.S. this week. On his agenda, negotiations for a trade deal between the U.S. and Japan, along with 10 other countries. One potential sticking point is the way Japan handles its currency. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson explains.
Currencies are like seesaws. One can't fall in value without another one rising. And for the last few years, the yen has been falling. Japan has pumped more currency into circulation, saying it wants to fight deflation.
Now, that's their official line.
Scott Seaman is with the Eurasia Group.
But everyone knows that behind that is definitely a business community that has complained for many years that the value of the yen is too strong.
They'd prefer a weaker yen. So the stuff Japan makes is cheaper relative to the stuff other countries are selling. And that is why this is a trade issue, says Ishwar Prasad. He's an economics professor at Cornell.
Some people in the U.S. are concerned that by opening up U.S. markets and by tolerating other countries' policies that drive down their values of their currencies, the U.S. might lose out.
For example, American automakers who think the cheap yen is giving Japanese carmakers an unfair advantage. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
In the years after the housing bubble burst, census data showed that Americans, especially younger Americans, were giving up suburban life for city living. Millennials, it was said, wanted walkable neighborhoods, public transit, smaller homes. Marketplace's Noel King reports on some new census data that shows the suburbs are experiencing a revival.
Last year, Kristen Foti moved from Washington, D.C. to the suburbs, Falls Church, Virginia. She'd gotten married and then pregnant, and the suburbs were a better fit financially.
We could not afford a home in D.C. that was big enough for a family of three and a dog. We also then wouldn't be able to afford on top of that money for private school, and we personally didn't feel comfortable sending our kid to D.C. public schools.
The same reasons people have moved to the suburbs for decades. Except in the post-recession years, people stopped moving to the burbs in such large numbers. Ken Johnson is a demographer at the University of New Hampshire.
Suburban areas, which traditionally have received large flows of migrants, particularly from big urban cores, did not receive those flows. And so growth in the suburbs slowed down quite dramatically.
Which led to speculation that maybe the suburbs were dying, that millennials preferred living in cities. Not so fast, says Johnson, who just analyzed the newest census data. It shows suburbs are growing again.
Between July 1st of 2013 and July 1st of 2014, 123,000 more people left big urban cores than came to them.
And in contrast, more people moved into the suburbs than left them. William Fry, a demographer with the Brookings Institution, says some of what was perceived as changing tastes may actually have been economic necessity.
The economy did not allow these young people to afford mortgages to move to the suburbs, and they were stuck at home in their parents' basement with college loans and putting their life on hold. And now the economy is ticking up a little bit, and there may be a little bit of a mini surge back to the suburbs again.
So was Kristen Foti just waiting until she could afford a house in the burbs? She says no way.
It's really boring. Falls Church is really boring. And so every day I drive my son into the D.C. and we go to the parks and we go to the Smithsonian's.
Kristen is a millennial. Her husband, who's a few years older, is not. And Kristen says he really prefers suburban life. I'm Noelle King for Marketplace.
And news today that Tyson, the maker of all things chicken, is planning to scale back its use of antibiotics in its flocks. The company is responding to public health worries about drug-resistant bacteria. I'm Adrienne Hill with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.